The next case on calendar this morning is State versus District Court, with the real party in interest being Bussert, case number 63741. And I know counsel was in the audience earlier when I announced that Justice Perigary is unavoidably absent today. He will participate fully, consider the arguments based on the conference tape today, and he'll participate in our deliberations. He simply couldn't be here and extends his regrets. So, Mr. Thompson, are you ready to go?
I am.
And we did not have a reply, so
that's
you
correct.
May not reserve time.
May it please the Court. My name is Chad Thompson. I'm a deputy district attorney for Elko County, and I've been assigned this particular case, which originated back in 2011, November 26 of 2011. It started with a citation of the real party in interest, Mr. Bussert. He was traveling southbound on US 93, just south of Jackpot, in a semi-truck with it. He was pulling a trailer. He came up behind a small vehicle, a little Honda Civic, driven by the Morialis. He was tailgating them, was part of the allegation, and then he then proceeded to pass them while there was an oncoming car coming. He didn't have enough room and started to move over before his trailer had passed the Civic, and they ended up going three wide on US 93 at that point. Both of the smaller cars moved off and allowed him the center lane. The Morialis then observed him further down, did the same thing to yet another vehicle, and then they called it in to the police, and they met up in Wells with a trooper who had pulled over Mr. Bussert, and there the citation was issued by a trooper there. The citation originally just read ECC, which is Elko County Code, Imprudent Driving. In February of 2012, the district attorney's office filed a superseding complaint where we filled in the citation and cited ECC 8-1-9 of the Elko County Code. Now, 8-1-9 actually has several subparts, A through G, and what's really in question here is just Section A, which talks about it requires that a person drive a motor vehicle on a highway, and he must do so in a careful or prudent manner. The trial was had in March before the Wells Justice Court of 2012, and he was found guilty. They filed an appeal. And then in February of 2013, the district court ruled that the Elko County Code, the imprudent driving statute, was unconstitutional, that it didn't meet both of the prongs, that first of all, it did not give notice to the public, and it was also subjective enough that it was possible for arbitrary and discriminatory enforcement by police officers. The district court also found that this Elko County Code conflicted with the repeal of 484.060, which was a state legislative or a state legislature section once upon a time. I think it was repealed in 1969 or so. But it was the careless driving statute that the state had, and they repealed theirs.
That was the safe and sane law?
Well, it basically had the same exact language that the Elko County Code one has. And as you see in the district court's rulings, they say, we don't want to punish negligent conduct, and so they repealed it. It wasn't because it was found unconstitutional. It wasn't because of any other challenge. The state legislature just said, we don't want a statewide law for that.
Well, Council, preliminary question. Is the reason that this particular code section was used by the citing officer in this case because he didn't actually observe the driving, and therefore he had to rely on representations made by those who made the report to him?
Can't speak naturally for the officer. We didn't investigate that thoroughly during the trial as far as what his motivations were behind it. What you can say is that, yes, he did not observe them. He gets the representations of multiple violations from these people, and instead of citing somebody for each one of them, he can also lump them all together and say, oh, the whole together creates a careless driving. Everything he did, the tailgating, the passing the first time, the passing the second time, this guy's got something else going on, and that's why he
used it. So following too close, any of that he would not have been able to actually make out because he wasn't there to observe.
That is correct. It would not have precluded our office, however. We could have separated out in the complaint, and we could have done separate statutes of the other applicable, falling too closely or passing unsafely or things like that. But it's normally our practice that we'll follow through with whatever the officer cites it initially based on his observations.
So it's pretty much up to the officer to decide how he wants to cite?
Not entirely. Obviously, if it's something that's just totally inapplicable, we will change that when we do the superseding complaint in a case like
that. And from the point of view of the finder of fact, the justice of the peace or municipal court judge, I guess it was a justice of the peace here?
Yes, Judge Colton.
That person is applying an objective standard similar to a reasonable person in the tort arena, or is it, describe for me, if you will, what that standard careless and prudent signifies.
Well, and that's part of the issue here is whether or not that language is so unusual, careful, and prudent. If you look up prudent, just its natural meaning of in a thesaurus, a synonym will be careful and reasonable. And we use the term reasonable all the time in the law. You just heard it in the last case where they use that term reasonable over and over and over. And so it will be up for the fact finder to determine whether or not that is a careful or prudent manner or a reasonable manner in which to operate a motor vehicle. And that's.
But you concede it's an objective standard. You're not saying it has to be the personal. It's not a subjective standard such as annoy a minor. That depends on the minor being annoyed to meet the standard. But reasonable person would be an objective standard like juries apply all the time in the tort arena.
Correct. And that's what we would expect, in fact. And therefore, that's why this law, there's a deference that should be given towards constitutionality in this particular instance. And
so you would accept that limiting construction if it salvaged the constitutionality of this?
Absolutely. In fact, we believe that that's the way it has been and should be continued to be applied, is that careful and prudent just means reasonable. And we expect jurors to use the term reasonable when they do beyond a reasonable doubt, reasonable apprehension of bodily harm. It's used all of the time. And so would a reasonable person be driving in this careful and prudent manner? And that's all that those really mean. Careful and prudent, in our eyes, is really synonymous with reasonable and proper. And it would be an objective standard that the fact finder would use at that point. And so in looking at it, the constitutional standards, is there sufficient notice to the public of to what kind of conduct is necessary here? Our law states it has to be careful and prudent operation of a motor vehicle on a highway. We believe that that is sufficient to put somebody on notice. Careful and prudent are very normal words. Little kids know how to use those. They know what that means. That's going to be avoiding harm to yourself or to other people while you're doing this activity of driving. Is it so vague that somebody can't understand that? The state would suggest that it's not. The statutes, and in fact that Escalante case that we cited from the Fifth Circuit, where they are in looking at this, I think it was a Mississippi code, they have in theirs, without due regard for the width, grade, curves, corner, traffic, and use of the streets and highways, and then they throw in there, and all other attendant circumstances. It would be our argument that our statute already reads that this is on a highway. What highway doesn't have a grade, a width, a curve, a corner, a traffic? I mean, that's something that it's already in there when you have the word highway. Do we really have to spell it all out in order to put the
and
public on notice?
Did the charging document clearly specify that it was following too close, hogging the center of the road with oncoming traffic on both sides of the truck, and so on? So the specific facts alleged to give rise to the not careful or prudent driving were specified in the charging document?
It was, and that is what we do.
Is that what the facts showed at trial?
Yes. And that is what we do, and when we charge these, is you cite the code, and then you say, in by this manner, and then we will fill it in how the person was driving carelessly, and then it would be up to the fact finder to put forth an objective standard at that point. All right, does this meet careful and prudent by what they did here? And so we always will allege what the conduct and the manner means.
Did you make any argument challenging whether or not the defendant was effectively making or trying to make a facial challenge to this statute when, as applied to him and his driving, it fairly clearly applied, and so he wouldn't have a claim. I didn't see that argument on either side's part, whether facial or as applied.
No, we didn't do it as applied. It was strictly as a, across the board whether the statute was unconstitutional. So in looking at the prongs, you have the first one is the public on notice, and we would say that it is. And it's necessary for this kind of a statute to be brought because, as the court points out in that Joas decision, again, it's from a different court or from a different jurisdiction, but it's going to be almost impossible for a legislator to come up with every possible means that somebody might be able to drive carelessly. But using these terms that are commonly understood, we will avoid, you know, having loads more statutes. I recognize that, for example, we just enacted the cell phone statute, which would have been originally, it could have fallen under this careless driving statute. Sorry, I lost my train of thought with the bell.
The cell phone statute.
The cell phone statute. So that could have applied in that one. But obviously the legislature can take one of those that they feel is such a dire need or a need in the state that they could make a specific statute on that particular behavior. But you're going to have other behaviors. If the guy's reading the New York Times or if he's cooking or if he's playing with his dog on his lap or something like that while he's driving, do we really want statutes for all of those things? Or can we just let them use the common terms careful and prudent or reasonable person standard to allow the public to know what is and is not? And in fact, the Escalante Court from the Fifth Circuit says that a few people misapprehend what constitutes careful driving and what does not. In contrast with the Silver case from Southern Nevada regarding the prostitution, the one here in Nevada where they found that statute unconstitutional, that had to do with prostitution, where there's going to be a very small group of people that are going to understand what that conduct is. We're talking about driving a motor vehicle, which is as common as it gets in daily life. Even little children can see things because they're riding in cars. They notice speeds. This is not something that we have to delineate with such specificity to maintain the constitutionality of the statute.
What about the argument, though, that such a capacious standard, in effect, allows the officer to kind of have pretextual stops? It seemed to me he wasn't driving safely. His tires were over to the left of the dotted white line in the middle of the road, even though no one else was around. That's the argument on prong two, or test two, really. They're separate tests, but I think that's the graver concern here.
Well, in that particular instance that you bring up, they actually could pull him over for crossing over the center line or not maintaining his lane in that particular instance. What would be a greater concern is if he were to pull somebody over thinking that maybe they're doing something carelessly, but not actually be able to observe it or something to that effect. The officers or drivers, just like everybody else, they're going to understand the ordinary standard or the ordinary meaning of these words of careful, prudent, and reasonable. The arbitrary enforcement.
But is it for the officer to understand or is it for the driver to understand?
The second prong would be for the officer. So to preclude the discriminatory, the first prong would be for the people, the second one for the officer. And so it needs to be clear enough so the officer doesn't abuse his discretion at that point. And in reality, where these come up, the majority of the time, is after something has already occurred. For example, somebody runs a stop sign, they do further investigation, and you find out, why did he run the stop sign? Well, I was reading, or I was doing something else. So he was carelessly driving before he actually ran the stop sign, but further investigation is what brings that out. Rarely are you going to find that. I know in their brief they bring up somebody who drinks one time or has one beer. I'm not exactly sure how that would ever come to the police officer's attention unless there was some other, I served the guy one beer and he stumbled out of the door, then drove off in a crazy way down the road, then you might find out that, yes, this guy, there's going to be other facts to it. It's not just going to
be a
reporting
over. But, you know, counsel, you use a great example, and it goes to where I started, and I think where Justice Pickering was just going with her last question, and that is, what if, instead of the Morales's reporting the conduct on the road that they saw in your case, someone reported someone stumbling out of a bar. The police officer made a stop based upon the stumbling out of the bar that was reported to him and the fact that someone got behind the wheel. Turns out that the person was stumbling over their shoe or they were just clumsy. But it sure gave that officer an opportunity to make a stop, almost pretextual in nature. And what if they saw, a gun sitting on the passenger seat or a bag of green leafy substance? I guess certainly that's my concern in this case, is that you could manufacture just about anything.
I think the difference, though, in that is that normally those kind of instances, that's where the officer's being reported that information. He's not the one abusing that information. It may be a bartender or somebody else. He may have the ready report or somebody else who's reporting that in. If you're saying that the officer sitting there and watched this guy stumble out and then observed his driving as he went out and he did something else at that point.
No, I was saying the exact same facts that you have. Somebody else reported the stumbling out of a bar and getting behind a wheel. And I'm sorry, she's taking up so much time.
You may answer her question.
So you're saying that somebody else reports it?
Yeah, just like in this case.
And sees this guy stumbling out of the bar?
Mm-hmm.
I don't see why the officer couldn't pull him over if there's somebody else who has reported that in. You just pull him over and just check, hey, how are you doing? Oh, you're stumbling, that's fine, and then he's on his way.
Unless he has the green leafy bag next to him or the gun sitting on the passenger side or something like that.
That is not something that they're creating as a pretextual stop. This is something that somebody else saw and they thought, you know what, that guy doesn't look like he's ready to drive, and they called it in. They, an ordinary person, said, I know what careful and prudent driving is, and that guy doesn't look like he's capable of it as he's leaving right now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Richard Sears from Mr. Bussard. When I look at Elko County Code 8-1-9, it consists of parts A through G. When I look at A, this statute could easily be corrected or improved or made, at least in my view, constitutional with the following words. It is the policy of Elko County that every person should drive a car or operate a motor vehicle upon a highway in a careful and prudent manner. That's what this really is. This is a policy statement. And B, C, D, E, F, and G would then be illustrations of that policy. It's a policy statement because it's a very broad statement, as I argued in my briefs, with not much guidance for a particular police officer or for a particular citizen to say, this thing, if you see this thing, this is unlawful. If you don't see that, it's okay. That, I think, would correct this statute, make it certainly a good statute, make it fall within the parameters of the Constitution, but it doesn't say that. It doesn't really say purpose. It is the purpose of this statute.
Would it alleviate our concerns about pretextual, the possibility for there to be pretextual stops?
It would, because you couldn't violate A unless you did either B, C, D, E, F, G, or H.
And the officer presumably would have to articulate one of the following subsections in order to not be challenged on other circumstances.
It would certainly make it easier to prepare a defense in a case like this, and that's part of the problem that occurred within the confines of this case that didn't make it to this court. And that was when the citation was issued, it just said, imprudent driving. No facts were issued. It took the DA's office to come in and put in some facts in the case to hang some facts on the skeleton. Most cases, these guys are truckers going down Highway 80. They get a citation for imprudent driving. They're not coming back. They never see the allegation of facts. They just pay the $350, which appears to be the standard fine. That was an argument that I made below that didn't make it to this level because I prevailed. But I think the deputy DA kind of glossed over that part of the problem. I mean, there is a small fraction of these cases that make it to trial. That's because these guys are gone. They're going through. I defended two of these cases. Both were truckers. Both of them didn't want to come back for trial. And I took the cases because I thought it was the right thing to do.
But as to your client, once the allegation or the citation was filled out, the facts were put on the skeleton, if you will, as to him, if it were true that he was following too close and driving little cars off the road and passing with careless abandon, as to him, would it not be fair to apply that statute, assuming it were narrowed by us to be just an objective, reasonable man type standard, or reasonable person, pardon me?
I'm not sure that that gets you to guidelines.
Right, I'm not sure either. That's what I'm...
And I'm not sure that it gets my client to an understanding that what he did was unreasonable. Unfortunately, in this case, Bussert was on the road and couldn't come back for the trial. All I could get out of the arresting officer was the statement, didn't Bussert tell you that they sped up and slowed down and wouldn't let him back in? And he admitted, yeah, that's what Bussert said. And he didn't remember whether or not they denied that. That obviously wasn't enough to convince the justice of the peace that in fact there was a good defense in this case. But as I analyzed the case, I thought, what if he did speed up and slow down? So what? Wasn't Bussert still careless under the standard for getting out and attempting in a big, slow truck to pass a slow car or a fast car? I'm sorry. He should have been able to foresee that when he went around this guy could speed up, right? And if he started to slow down and this guy decided at the same time, well, I'm not going to make it. I better slow down. It puts Bussert in the same problem. Only the other guy's careless. Maybe they're both careless under the circumstances. That's the problem with the analysis and the defense under this ordinance as it's written. I'm not sure that there was any way to defend Bussert, assuming that he genuinely wanted to pass and didn't want to do anything wrong, and assuming the small car didn't do anything wrong either. The small car sees the big truck come up behind him. Small car speeds up. Truck speeds up as it tries to go around him. Small car suddenly realizes, holy cats, I'm in trouble. I better slow down. At the same time, they both slow down. There was probably no carelessness there whatsoever. Under those circumstances, it was just what led to a bad situation, three cars passing on a highway. That was the problem with the preparation of the defense in this case. How do I know which act was careless? Was everybody careless? Was nobody careless? When we talk about negligence, negligent cases, they require some sort of a standard. Somebody has to prove up a standard in order to find negligence. This doesn't seem to have any standard written in the ordinance, unlike when we have a negligence case where we've got it.
What if the statute had the word in it, in any other than a reasonably careful or prudent manner? Would that save its constitutionality in your mind?
No.
Okay.
I don't.
Why
think,
not?
I still don't think that provides any sort of guideline to a police officer in any reasonably prudent manner. So it's in the idea of the police officer, how would a prudent man have handled this situation?
So even if it were an objective standard,
not
theoretically, the reasonable person standard of torts first year in law school, that wouldn't catch it because it's...
No, because in torts, you've got to have a standard in order to prevail, right, in your negligence action. Somewhere there's a standard. Some expert comes in and tells you what the standard is, but there's got to be a standard of care that somebody fails to abide by. My problem with this in that kind of an analysis, we never get a standard of care. There's no specific standard of care that's getting proven to the judge or at least proven to the citizen that he failed to abide by. Certainly not in this case when the citation was issued. There were no facts in the citation. None. It didn't say unsafe passing. It didn't say anything. It just imprudent driving. That's what the citation said. Granted, Mr. Johnston fixed it later, although I think a better fix would have been instead of citing to A, go to B, C, D, E, F, G, or one of the NRSs that say, hey, you can't pass in this kind of a fashion on a two-lane road.
When I mean, it's not that. So when he fixed it, though, does he fix the constitutional infirmity? Because at that point, your client knew precisely what he was arguing added up to careless and imprudent driving?
I don't believe it does. It certainly made it a little bit easier for me to try and defend. But I still had, I at least had some facts of a pass. I knew that this involved a pass at that point. But it still doesn't tell me where the carelessness was. Was he careless just because he went around the car? Was he careless because when the other guy sped up, assuming he did, which is what he said, he should have stopped quicker. Why didn't he slow down faster? Why did he continue to attempt to pass him? I mean, I was always faced in trying to prepare a defense to this, was how do I get around careless and prudent? I mean,
and there was not a no-passing zone. This didn't occur within a no-passing zone.
That would have been easy. I'd have pled him guilty in a New York minute, okay? That was the easy case. Yeah, there was no obvious violation of the law, okay? It was the fact that he wasn't prudent and he wasn't careful. And that was the rationale for my taking this up. The police officer said, we were informed to charge this crime when we are not sure because it, being the ordinance, is a catch-all. Let's look at that. We were informed. Sounds like training. Sounds like somebody told this guy. If you can't figure out what else it is, if you're not sure, charge this. That was what really caught my attention. Not in this case, but in the prior case. This thing doesn't have any guidelines. It's a catch-all. And I know that you were cited to other cases, but in those other cases, at least there was some sort of a standard that was at least nodded to by the drafters, okay? And in this case, there's no such thing. Actually, if we look at it, based on the arguments that we heard from the state, all we need is this. We don't need any other standards. We don't need any other statute. We don't need any other violations of the law. Because every violation of the law is going to be this, even if it's an equipment violation, right? I mean, if you know your taillight's out, well, it's careless to drive on a road with a taillight out, isn't it? I sort of interpreted prudent a little differently. I think of prudence as wisdom. You should be wise in what you're doing, okay? The wise old owl, prudence, anyway. So I saw that as a little bit of a difference between the two. I didn't equate them. And I thought, well, we do all kinds of things when we're driving that are unwise. I saw four or five violations of this driving over here yesterday, people doing things that I thought were unwise. Of course, I couldn't give them a ticket. I didn't call them in. It wouldn't have done any good. I was in the middle of nowhere. But nonetheless, that is the complaint that arises in my mind over this statute. It just doesn't seem to provide any guidance whatsoever to either the officer or the driver. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
What do you do with the issue, though, that there are limits to the ability of the English language to particularize, and that in the area of driving, for example, it might be perfectly fine to pass on 95 outside Tonopah going down the hill, except for if it were, and this rarely would happen, but deep fog, so you can't see. In that situation, what would normally be a perfectly fine pass would not be if you were in that. So this would capture a situation that otherwise would go
It would certainly capture it, and a whole lot more. I mean, that's the problem.
But what about the idea that there is a need to have a traffic law that fills in interstitially for the specific violations?
It seems to me that the task of the legislature, which has an LCB, lawyers on both sides of an issue who argue it before it gets passed, it seems to me that that kind of an ordinance or statute can be taken up by the legislature, who's fully aware of those particular issues and has all of the, facilities and help and assistance in crafting a statute that not only addresses the issue, but is constitutionally valid. I mean, the situation in front of a county commission is far different. And I'm not saying that this ordinance isn't entitled to deference because it was done by a commission. But when a commission addresses an ordinance, they're addressing something with multiple goals in mind, okay? And when a trier of fact who happens to be a justice of the peace who's up for election, okay, is listening to a case, there is some hint of a desire to make sure that these out-of-towners drive safely. I mean, how could it not be so? When we talk about the other statutes that refer, like the obscenity one is a great one. Well, you know it when you see it. Well, the difference there is it's a community standard. You got 12 jurors who come in the door and say, oh, yeah, that's obscenity, okay? You don't have that in these misdemeanor cases. Your trier of fact is the same one who's pronouncing judgment, who listens to the evidence, who has to stand for election. And I'm not saying that that's all bad. It's probably good. But we need to provide in those situations more than in some others where you have an independent juror. We need to provide some guidelines so everybody's on the page. We all know exactly what we're talking about when we have a violation. It's not that hard to do. We see it with speed statutes, hundreds of equipment violations, snow tire violations, unlawful passing violations. And in this case, quite frankly, if they had proven their case, they would have proved, I suppose, an NRS violation, which they didn't do because they didn't plead it. So that's my argument. I think that particularly with respect to misdemeanors, we need to provide guidance, maybe even more particularly than we do in some felony cases because or gross misdemeanors because of the different way they're handled. And if you have any more questions, I'd be happy to answer.
No.
I'm done early. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your briefs and arguments. This is a very interesting case, and it will stand submitted. And drive carefully, everyone.